All right, thank you. Well, I'm going to take a little shift from what everybody else has been talking about and talk about soil physics and some hydraulic properties, which fit a little more in my realm, a little more of what I'm comfortable with. I always like to start off with this. I know that everybody here knows what hydraulic conductivity is, but it's just how I like to get rolling. We know that hydraulic conductivity is the ability of a porous medium to transmit water under saturated or nearly saturated conditions, and typically when you're making measurements in the field, there's usually more closer to the nearly saturated because of entrapped air. But there are a lot of things that really affect hydraulic conductivity. You have size and distribution of pores, the soil structure, the interconnectedness of pores, and all of this is very spatially variable in soil. So it's not just particle size, it's not just bulk density, but there's a lot of things that affect hydraulic conductivity. And I love this graph just because, you know, it really illustrates that quite well, and it shows the difference between hydraulic conductivity, both saturated and unsaturated, as it goes down the curve. Which I don't know how to use a mouse. That's okay. But what it shows here is that if you're looking at two clayey soils, one that's poorly structured and one that's really well structured, you can have a significant difference in saturated hydraulic or field saturated hydraulic conductivity. And so it's really important to understand that, and that's what makes it really hard to just try and model this as well. Why is saturated hydraulic conductivity important? I mean, for many different reasons. Why do we care? I mean, we care about for hydrology modeling, if we're trying to model runoff, or if we're trying to do post-fire work, looking at those types of things. It's really important there. I remember when I was at Texas A&M, a lot of the work, some of the sites that we were doing at the research watershed there with ARS in Riesel, Texas, there were cases where they'd have a 15-inch rainfall event. And this might be exaggerating a little bit, but measure little to no runoff because of the open cracks in these soils, and so that changes seasonally as well. So it's really important to understand that for agricultural decisions, especially as people are moving more and more towards precision ag and precision irrigating, and we need to understand how that soil is going to take up the water. And so there are people that are trying to make better decisions that way. In a geotech world, if we're looking at landfill covers, obviously typically the goal is to reduce infiltration. Usually they're looking for 10 to the minus 6 centimeters per second or lower in most cases, unless it's an alternative cover where they're trying to increase ET, and so they have slightly different goals there. But just many geotechnical applications where hydraulic conductivity is important. There are a lot of ways to measure hydraulic conductivity. There's laboratory methods, you have flow cells, you have other devices for measuring KSAT in the lab. And then you have field measurements, you have ring infiltrometers, you have double and single ring infiltrometers, you have borehole permeometers, and then you have a pressure infiltrometers. And they all have their advantages, and they all have their differences. If you try and compare laboratory results with field results of saturated hydraulic conductivity, it's very rarely do they compare well. And there's many reasons for that. Oftentimes you can have a core that you take that has an open-ended pore from worm activities or root channels or root decay. And in the field, that pore closes, it eventually ends, and it may not be in that core. So you can have significant differences between the two methods. So they each have their application. I want to talk a little bit about the area that I'm probably most familiar with, which is the single and double ring infiltrometers. So with a single ring infiltrometer, you have a single measuring cylinder. You can have ranging diameters, 10 to 50 centimeters. Obviously, as you get larger in diameter, it uses a lot more water. And if you're working in those wonderful Texas soils, it's really hard to drive big rings into the ground. It takes a lot of work. You can do falling or constant head methods with this approach. You can use a Marriott cylinder or a Marriott bubbler to control a constant head. With the single ring approach, one of the things that we have to do is we have to correct for three-dimensional flow. And so there are ways to do that, but one of the things that we have to use in that is what's called the alpha parameter, which is the soil macroscopic capillary length factor. And what that tells us is it's a correlation with the soil sorptivity and the ability to actually pull that water laterally. So that can be difficult because if you do use the wrong alpha value, you can underestimate or overestimate your KFS values. You can make some significant errors there. The other approach is the double ring infiltrometer. You have two concentric rings. One in the middle is meant to be your measuring cylinder, and the other ring on the outer ring is meant to be a buffering ring to buffer the flow on that inner ring from three-dimensional flow. But what a lot of research has shown is that it doesn't really work that well. In some cases, in coarser textured soils, it probably works just fine. But in some finer textured soils, you can still get flow from that double ring laterally. And so sometimes it can make it hard to do comparisons, and sometimes you wind up overestimating KFS. So a lot of things I just talked about with double rings and single ring infiltrometers, one of the nice advantages with those is you can get a large ring and really cover some of that, more of that spatial variability. And using this method, you know, you get really good representation of what's going to happen in the field. The disadvantages with this, they're really time consuming. Again, they require that estimation of the soil property, that alpha value to correct for three-dimensional flow. And in the double ring infiltrometers, because that buffer cylinder is not always effective, you wind up overestimating KFS, which can be bad, and in some cases may not matter too much. But especially if you're doing landfill, looking at landfill covers, and you want your value to be under a certain regulatory parameter, and you wind up overestimating it, that can be an issue. I want to talk a little bit about why I worked on this project and where it came from. My graduate research when I was at Texas A&M, I developed a semi-automated double ring infiltrometer system. And I made over 200 measurements of KFS in the field. And you can see an example of this set up here. And we had our nice little umbrellas there for shade because we spent so much time out in the field in Texas. And so, you know, you gotta cool down when you can. But these required a lot of work, even though they were still semi-automated. I mean, you had to maintain the water, and they wound up oftentimes using a lot of water. What our goal was is we were trying to look at the effects of land use on landscape position on soil hydraulic properties. So you can see an example of some of the data that we collected here. We looked at three different land uses and looked at the different hill slope positions and looked at the effects there. And this was a map, an EM38 map of one of the fields that we did work in. The way we made decisions to make measurements is first we delineated the field into different zones to try and find some zones of spatial variability. And then we also wanted to make measurements across those different hill slope positions. We wanted to be on the summit, the back slope, and the foot slope. And so a typical measurement took between 90 to 120 minutes. And in some cases, I used over 2,000 liters of water on some of these measurements because of these cracking soils can have really high hydraulic conductivities. And so in one case, I wasn't paying attention, and I walked away for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I came back, and my 500-gallon tank was empty. And so I went through a lot of water. It was just a big crack that we found, and I didn't realize it was there. So, you know, that happens. But because these measurements took so long, I spent a lot of time out in the field. And you know, when you have these long days in the field, you have the chance of being caught on Google Earth or Bing. So I spent a lot of time in that field, and so that was kind of what I really wanted to avoid, or at least make it easier to where you could do other things. So when we started developing this new instrument, our goal was, one, we wanted the measurement to be fully automated as much as possible. We wanted to reduce the water requirements. We didn't want to have to use those 500-gallon water tanks. And I know there are people that are doing measurements where they're having to hike and take water with them, and so something like that's not going to work well. Portability, of course. But we also wanted to be able to handle as much of a broad range of flux rates as we could, because we wanted to be able to get down to the really low flux rates, but get as high as we could. And the other thing we wanted to do when we developed this was we wanted to be able to make it easier to just calculate KFS instead of having to go through and do all the post-processing, especially for people that are consultants or that are just trying to get this measurement. They shouldn't need to have to do all this post-processing. Let's just have an easy way to make this calculation. So we developed this instrument based on the two-ponding depth analysis approach from Reynolds and Ulrich. The reason we chose this method is because instead of having to estimate an alpha value to correct for three-dimensional flow, using the two-ponding head approach, you can actually directly estimate that value and do the corrections that way for three-dimensional flow. So it's just a more robust method, and it allows us to automatically output a KFS value. But we did modify it a little bit and simplified it based on some work from John Nemo in 2009. So just looking at the design here, when we started designing it up, we had some goals. Again, we wanted to be able to maintain a constant water level, so we maintain a constant water level of 5 centimeters. We have a capacitance sensor that measures the water level. And then in order to make the measurement as fast as it can be, because it is a long measurement process, and using this dual head approach, we decided to use air pressure to simulate the different pressure heads instead of adding more water to induce these different hydrostatic pressures. And the reason for that is if you're working in a really low permeability soil and you go up, say you increase your pressure head to maybe, say, from 5 centimeters to 10 centimeters, and then you have to go back down to that 4 centimeter or that 5 centimeter head, you might be there for an hour just waiting for it to go back down. So if we use air pressure, we can quickly go back and forth between those different pressure heads. So it actually worked out quite well. So here's an example of what the inside of the case looks. It's probably a little hard to see here because it's a lot light. But what we use is we have a peristaltic pump with a stepper motor. And what that stepper motor does is it allows us to have precise control of the flow. So we tell the motor, okay, turn half a turn, and it turns exactly half a turn. Or we could even do a quarter of a turn if we wanted to. And so that also allows us to do our flow calculation because we know exactly how many times we're turning that pump. And it's actually very consistent. We've tested this beyond at different flow ranges and flow rates. The only things you have to avoid is getting air bubbles in your line. So if you wind up sucking in a lot of air bubbles, you can be slightly off in your flow measurement. And then what we did to control the air pressure is we have an air pump, and it's monitored with a pressure transducer, and we have two solenoids that control vacuum and pressure. And this allows us to be able to apply vacuum if we want, or apply a that positive pressure to simulate those different hydrostatic pressures. So here's an example of what that pressure control can look like. And what you'll see initially, we're applying actually a vacuum, and then when we go up into our low pressure head and then our high pressure head. The reason we apply vacuum at the beginning is to allow the water to catch up as it's filling to that 5 centimeter level. And so it just is to allow it to get up there and do its thing. And then here's an example of what those flux measurements look like. And this is on a golf green. But you can see the initial flux from the adding of water. And then when we're at our low pressure head, you have a lower flux rate. And at a higher pressure head, you have a higher flux rate, which is pretty intuitive. I wanted to talk a little bit about the data analysis because I'm sure this is important to a lot of you people. KFS is defined as I, which is your infiltration rate, divided by F. F is a function that corrects for that sorptivity as we were talking about and those geometrical factors, and that's how we do the correction for ring insertion depth, ponding depth, and also for the three-dimensional flow. You can see the equation here, how John Nemo writes it, where we are looking at, so we're essentially correcting using lambda, which is a reciprocal of the Gardner value, that alpha value, where we correct for the depth of ponding, the depth of the insertion, and then we have a couple coefficients in there, C1 and C2, which are standard from the Reynolds and Elric paper on doing these corrections. And then it's simplified, essentially delta is takes into account the major part of the corrections, and it's consistent across the same geometric design for an infiltrometer. And so for two ponding depths, we write this equation like this. So we have the infiltration rate at the first ponding depth and the infiltration rate at the second ponding depth. And because of the two ponding depths, essentially what we can do is take lambda out of the equation, and it simplifies the equation to this, where essentially what we're doing is we're taking KFS is delta, which is the correction for those geometrical factors, times your infiltration rate at the low pressure head minus the infiltration rate at the higher pressure head, divided by your two different ponding depths. And so here's an example of what that looks like when we're pulling it from the data. So you can see where we take our infiltration rates from our low and high pressure heads. And then this is where we pull our ponding depth data from our pressure data, because it includes it's the equivalent hydrostatic pressure. So just wanted to go through what the setup in the field is like. First thing you do is install the ring. And of course, I'm really lucky. We live in the Palouse. We have beautiful soils to work with. They're really easy to insert rings into. And so you drive down this insertion ring into the soil. This ring has a 5-centimeter depth. And then after you've driven your ring you want to check the condition of the soil around the ring. You want to make sure you didn't, one, get lopsided and open a big gap. And sometimes it's good to either go in and just slightly tamp around the edge of the ring, or you can use a little bentonite around that ring soil interface to prevent any lateral flow or preferential flow down that ring. On the inside. Yeah. Sorry, did I say on the outside? Oh, okay. I didn't say either. I'm just leaving up for you to guess. on the inside of the ring where you're infiltrating the water, it's good just to seal that up because, you don't want any preferential flow. And in some soils, some of these looser soils, you can get that and it'll actually come up and out. So just it's good to try and deal with that. Attach the upper ring to the ring that you've inserted into the ground. And you connect your tubes for the water and the air. And then you connect the level sensor to the control unit. So it's a really simple setup, pretty straightforward. Essentially, you then go through and configure your test. When you're configuring a test, you're going to set different parameters. You're going to set your low and high pressure heads to dependent on your soil type. For higher permeability soils, you're typically going to have lower pressure heads because you don't need as high of a pressure head to induce that difference. So what we need to do is induce a difference in the flux rate to be able to make the correction for three-dimensional flow. So if you're measuring in a lower permeability soil, like a clay cap or just something that's going to have lower permeability, you're going to want to use some higher pressure head differences to induce a difference there. And pretty much from that, you walk away. I mean, it's good to keep an eye on it, make sure you have enough water, and keep an eye on things. And in hot days, it's actually good to shade the instrument because the unit can heat up. But what that allows you to do, and the whole goal of this when we were developing this, is to allow you to do other work while you're out in the field. So instead of having to sit there for 2 hours watching each ring and make sure everything was working right like I had to, you could go off and do other work in the field if you were taking samples or doing other measurements. The goal is to be able to do that. And so just to really simplify this as much, because you can't speed up the measurement. There's no way to really speed up the measurement. You're dealing with physics. You can do a transient method and try and estimate your steady flow rate, but there's inaccuracies with that, and there's a potential for error with that. So that's pretty much all I had.
How do you decide where to put it?
That's a good question. Again, we're talking about spatial variability. So it kind of depends on what your research goals are or what your goals are, but probably you're going to have to take multiple measurements. And that was the other goal is, if you're needing to take multiple measurements, somebody could go out and set up three of these at a time and take the multiple measurements. It depends on the goals. You do sometimes have to avoid if there's a really large crack. You're just not going to be able to supply enough water to keep up with it. You can do things like characterizing some of the variability using those EM maps just to help understand where you're going to maybe see some variability to go out and make those measurements. There's $3,100. Yeah, so equivalent to a Guelph permeameter, or I know there's, I think a Guelph permeameter is slightly cheaper, but we tried to make it as affordable as we could. Dan?
What's the little d?
The little d is insertion depth.
And what is it on
the device? 5 centimeters. Yeah, and we will probably have a 10-centimeter one later, because some people have like a duff layer that they might have to get through, or some things where they run into issues like that. So, yeah, Paolo.
Will the instrument interrupt the filtration process whenever
it reaches steady state.
For example.
No, it does not. We could put that into the firmware to actually detect that. But as of right now, no. You just kind of have to. If your soil is dry, then you're gonna you're gonna need more time to reach that quasi steady state.
You will be able to see the curve that you were showing.
Yes, you can see it, and you can stop your measurement if you've reached steady state. So, yeah, you had a question.
It goes up to how long can you run it for?
As long as you have enough water. typically, most measurements are probably going to be in the 90-minute range. If it's wet, you can probably do it in 60 minutes. It depends on the conditions. But it can go for several hours if you have enough water. So as long as you have enough. It comes with a 5-gallon water supply, but you can use other water sources. It doesn't have to be from that flexible water jug. It can, yeah. I think you had a question? Anything else? Thank you.